Sunday.
It's Sunday morning.
I love mornings.
The games are over, and we're breaking it all down. This is your Morning After podcast with all the insight and analysis on the Utes, Cougars, and Aggies. Presented by UCCU. Love where you bank. The Morning After podcast with Hans, Scotty, and Lloyd Cole begins right now.
And you gave us an opportunity to come in here and show what we're made of.
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Another edition of the Morning After podcast. Hans Olsen, Scott Gerard, Lloyd Cole here with you, bringing it to you bright and early. Gentlemen, how are you?
We're all three losers.
Yeah, 0-3, Lloyd. Way to bring it down, man. It's a rough day.
That it was. Little did I know that KG was going to spread his bad luck onto literally everybody. Though he almost got BYU a win. Shall we start there?
Yeah, let's do.
Certainly the best game of the day, no doubt.
Easily the best game of the day. BYU falls 31-24 to Oklahoma, but they had this one, Hans. They were right there for it.
So it was really a solid game plan. I thought that the team showed up. They played hard. They were very sound and had every opportunity to win this game, but they're minus three. Three turnovers to none. They can't force any, but they give up the ball three times. One of them a pick six. And this is one of the most brutal pick six I've ever seen in my life. So it's first and goal on the 2-yard line. BYU has an opportunity to go up 24-17 on Oklahoma. You go three running plays to get you to the 2-yard line. Two runs by Aiden Robbins, one run by Jake Retzlaff, and you're there on the 2-yard line. You go tempo. So everybody runs up to the line. They snap it. Jake Retzlaff takes the snap, turns to his left, fires towards Cody Epps. And right there is an Oklahoma safety that's sitting on the underneath side of that route. And he picks that thing off in the corner of the end zone and goes for a 100-yard pick six. Quick reversal, 24-17 Oklahoma, that fast. And it's like, watching him run without anybody in front of him, and Jake Retzlaff was chasing him as hard as he could. He was trying to catch him on the angle, but this guy takes it home. And that was it, man. He got sacked on a blindside sack, a really nice drawn-up blitz coming off the left side of the offensive line. And Jake Retzlaff double-clutched and brought the ball back in, and this dude hit him right square in the back and raked it out. And that was a big turnover. And then a mesh point issue where he went to pull to pitch and he dropped it on the ground, and it was a turnover. So how do you combat that? You can't really combat that against Oklahoma.
And Hans, you know, I look at those, like, obviously the pick six is what we're going to go to, but I go back to that fumble on the mesh point, and I mean, another, like, you get a stop and then you get the big punt return and you're at midfield and there's another opportunity to take the lead and you fumble that, you know, on the bad exchange and you turn that touchdown. Those three turnovers were all turned into touchdowns. Yeah. And Oklahoma, I mean, you had, there was blood in the water there, especially with Dylan Gabriel out of the game. Yep. And they can't get anything going offensively. And you give them three touchdowns. All three touchdowns are, you know, 30 or 21 out of the 31 points come off of turnovers. And Oklahoma's just too good for that. But it was there. I mean, who knew that it was going to be Oklahoma where you found your running game 11 games into the season, where they just couldn't be stopped. And Russell Wilson thought that was a bad decision to make at the goal line on that throw. I mean, that was just obscenely ridiculous that you would decide to throw that. The only worst decision that was made today in college football was the fourth down by Utah State against Boise State. We'll get that on the 2-yard line, and we'll get to that coming up a little bit later on. But I mean, my goodness, why, when you're running the ball well and you're dominating the line of scrimmage the way BYU was, why on this green earth would you try to do anything cute in that situation? It's beyond me. It's ridiculous. And unfortunately, I don't know if that's a call. I don't know if that's something he checked to, but I feel bad for Retzloff and just seeing him on the sideline. And Hans, I don't know if you saw the TV replay, and he's just banging his head against his helmet because he knows he just gave him away. But props to BYU. I mean, he gives up that touchdown, and then they march down and score and tie the game up again. I mean, they were a resilient bunch, but they just couldn't overcome those turnovers.
Problem is, that's right, the difference of being up essentially 31 to 24. They should have been the one that was up 31 to 24. I mean, to go down and score right after you get the ball back again. I mean, essentially, I mean, they were there to go up, and they should easily. I know it's a different circuit, but the fact that they were able to score right after that tells me that they had no problem moving the ball. I mean, Aiden Robbins had 182 yards rushing. Like, they haven't seen that all season long. They've been just yearning to have some sort of production like that. And as you said, Scott, who would have thought they would have gotten it against Oklahoma?
Yeah.
Aaron Roderick is going to catch the hellfire for that situation. But I really don't want to defend anybody. I just want to try to provide the facts. The facts are, when Jake Retzloff is behind center, you run a lot of RPO. You give him opportunities to make decisions in the run game. And guys, I talked to Jake Retzloff in the post game. He said that when they lined up with the RPO call, he's the one that brought it up that it was an RPO. He said when they lined up, he looked to his left, he saw Cody Epps was unmanned, so he was going to snap it and throw it to Cody. Now, props to Oklahoma for getting back over into a position to make that play. We talked to Kalani Sitake in the post game, and Kalani said, yes, that's an RPO, but here's the deal. Number one, should have ran it. Should have given it to Aiden Robbins. Number two, if that wasn't there, good, should have kept it, come around the edge. And, you know, the passing part is the third option. And that is a far distant option when you're running tempo, you're running the ball well, and you're sitting on the 2-yard line. So it was really clear that was an RPO, and that's a kid that made a bad decision to throw that ball instead of run it. And it did. It changed the whole flow of the game. I thought it was great that Jake Retzloff, Cody Epps, addressed it in the post game. He said, yeah, that was an RPO. Yeah, I was targeted, but that was he was trying to describe kind of what was happening. They all brought it up, talked about it very openly, and that's exactly what it was. So here's the deal, guys. You tell me. Aaron Roderick calls in this RPO. Jake Retzloff, he's got to make that decision, but he's got two different styles of run. Either he gives it to Aiden or he keeps it off the edge, but the pass is the distant third.
Yeah, I don't know what to make out of that. And look, you know, at the end of the day, this kid was playing JC ball, you know, less than a calendar year ago. And you're putting a lot on his shoulders against a really elite team, and they're going to bait you into doing some dumb stuff. And so here's my perspective. Why make him make that decision when it's first and goal at the 2-yard line, right, and your offensive line is having themselves a day? Why even make him make that decision, Hans? Like, why even put that on him? If I've got a young quarterback up against a team like that, and I'm controlling the line of scrimmage, I don't even make him make that decision at the goal line, because you got to be so, so crazy careful there. Just say, look, you know what? You got one job. turn around and hand it to the kid from UNLV and let him score, and let's take a 7-point lead.
Yeah. Number one team in the country in interceptions. They had 17 coming into this game. That was their 18th interception. So it's a good point. You know, you know that this team's going to be bird dogging. They're right there at the goal line, which is crazy, man. You should have seen the movement from the safety. You know, when you're talking about some type of pinch run where they could have just found 2 yards up the middle, and this guy's breaking on a route off an RPO. It was a great play by him. But yeah, I get that, Scotty. And I think the three of us would like to put ourselves in that position and say, oh yeah, we would have called the run. We would have called the blast, and we would have gone, you know, some type of power, probably rotated to 12 personnel and got it going downhill, because that's what they were doing and dominating with it. But yeah, he put it in Jake Retzlaff's hands and he threw the pick. And here's the deal. Jake Retzlaff has to learn from it. And they've got to be able to go to Oklahoma State and get this win. That's all there is to it. They have to find their sixth win on the road in probably a pretty tough environment against the Oklahoma State team. What, Lloyd, any idea what ended up happening between Oklahoma State and Houston?
I am looking right now, actually. Now that you said that, I was actually just looking. Sorry, I'm pulling it up right now. It is Oklahoma State pulled it out 43-30.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe, because Houston was up like 24-9.
Yeah, they scored. They outscored Houston 24-7 in the second half.
Oh geez.
Yeah. So that's a team in Oklahoma State that is they're 8-3, 6-2 in Big 12 play. I mean, that's a, wow. On the road. I mean, it's weird to say, because I you know, we're sitting there thinking that BYU's least likely chance of getting to a bowl game was going to be against Oklahoma, but that might have been their chance. Oddly to say, weirdly to say, like that might have been their chance to get there.
Might have.
Well, I mean, if they play like they played yesterday, they'll have a chance against Oklahoma State. You just got to bottle up what you did and cut out all the turnovers, obviously. But that effort, you know, because. You know, I had a coach tell me, and I told her this week, that the BYU looked broken against Iowa State. And they didn't look broken yesterday. I mean, they looked good. And they had some great moments, and they controlled the line of scrimmage. If you play that way, you'll have a chance against Oklahoma State. You'll be in that game.
Yeah. Aiden Robbins was great, guys.
Did they find something? Is that a, you know, I know Oklahoma's defense, they don't play necessarily a lot of it, but they found something there. They've played teams that you would think BYU's going to, you know, have success on the ground, and they just, for the most part, they haven't had it. Not this type of success. I mean, to rush for 217 yards against, you know, against Oklahoma's, it's pretty impressive.
Oklahoma's running a traditional 4-3 most of the time, too. We're running four downs, and they were keeping a pack three tight. So it was a full seven man box that they were running that inside zone into, and doing a heck of a job. I mean, I really don't know. And I asked Kalani. I said, "Did Coach Funk change up blocking schemes? Was there something you guys did different in practice?" And he's like, no, it's the health of the running backs. It was the movement from the offensive line. It was the run threat from Retzlaff that keeps teams honest on the outside for the pole. It was, you know, and he just kind of went down the list. He's like, no, nothing's like dramatically changed. It's not like they brought in a new offensive line coach and switched out three guys trying to find the right formula. It was just something that started working, and you hope it works against Oklahoma State, Lloyd. I mean, if it worked against Oklahoma, it could work against Oklahoma State. And the other thing is, watching BYU yesterday match up with an Oklahoma team physically, they didn't look outmatched, outmanned. They didn't look like they've got miles and miles to come to be big enough and fast enough to compete with the best of the Big 12. They did against Texas. They did against West Virginia. They did against Iowa State, but they didn't against Oklahoma. It, for one reason or another, like Scotty mentioned, they just bowed up and they took the broken tag off of them. And we'll see if they can prepare and get ready for Oklahoma State now.
Well, after several, you know, you talked about after several, lopsided losses, they looked like a team that belonged in the Big 12. And you wouldn't even thought they had been having struggles. They looked like a team that was really was firing on all cylinders. Hans, real quick, before we move on to the next, to the next game to talk about, do you think that is this one of those games where it has can have a hangover effect? I mean, you weren't expected to be in this game, and there they were. And is this a game that they can build off going into Oklahoma State?
Yeah, I think so. I really think so. And that bowl eligibility has been looming on these guys' heads for 5 weeks now.
Right. Just thinking, is this the week?
Yeah, it sure feels that way. And I do think that Retzlaff is right there, and he's so close. I mean, he gets that win. Even if you just took one of those turnovers away, because like Scotty talked about, that's 21 points. That's 21 quick points, short fields or pick sixes. So I do think that they're all going to find a little bit of energy in what they put together. And at the very minimum, I expect them to give Oklahoma State a good game. Oh, I did want to mention this too, guys, because it was obvious. They get all the receivers back. So they got them all back. They got Lassiter and Hill and Epps and the whole room. And there weren't as many alignment problems. And I really do think that filling a role and not having to fill somebody else's shoes made it a lot cleaner. So you didn't have guys that were out of place, and you didn't have a system that looked a little bit confused. Everybody was where they were supposed to be. They were lined up. They were getting off the ball, getting into their blocks and getting into their routes in the right time. So that was a really,
that's a plus.
Big positive.
We'll take that.
Yeah. Big positive.
All right, gentlemen, real quick before we move on, the Morning After podcast is brought to you by Utah Community Credit Union. Love where you bank. Let's move on to the Utes. Utes have a tough one. Get behind early against Arizona. They lose 42-18, and it was a game that got away from the Utes fast. And before I get into this game, I want to talk. I mean, me and Frank Dolce were doing the pregame show, and we probably about 20 minutes from this thing starting, we find out that the Utes are going to be without Karini Reed, Cole Bishop, Jonah Ellis. All out, none of them were dressed for the game. And we had PK on to talk about it, and all we knew is that they weren't dressed. So we, you know, as the game's going along, we're here. I'm seeing things on social media about possibly flu running through the team. And when we get into the post game, Kyle Whittingham says Jonah Ellis is out for the season, a season-ending injury. So not sure what happened there. Karini Reed and Cole Bishop both dealing with what he said made it sound like was an injury of some sort. And not sure, I think Cole Bishop, it sounded like they might not be ready for Colorado, but possibly back for a bowl game. So you're looking at the Utes being already shorthanded, being out without Karini Reed, Cole Bishop, Jonah Ellis in this game, and it was a rough run from the get go. You had Arizona scores right out of the gates on a trick play, and then. The next Utes go three and out, blocked punt, and that's returned for a touchdown, and it was sayonara. The game was, before you knew it, it was 28-0 in the second quarter, and Utes were playing catch up in a rainy game in Tucson, and it was this one was a tough one, for the Utes. They it was another game where you guys talked about it with Frank, by the way, on Thursday, where if Bryson Barnes is flirting with 300 yards and the running game's not happening, it's probably not going to go their way, and it didn't.
I listened to some of the post game with you and Frank. and heard you guys talking about Jalen Glover and kind of your take on Glover, what you had expected from him and what he's kind of becoming for the University of Utah. What does his future look like? And I mean, what are you seeing from his run game that's so frustrating to you?
Yeah, well, I think he is – he's. I thought he would – you know, as I talked in the post game, I thought he would be that next big back, and he's not that guy. I mean, Jaquindon Jackson's that guy. If he could stay healthy, he would be that guy. But Jalen Glover, he's not that guy that is able to break tackles, and that's always what you know, Utah running backs have been able to do. It's always that yak that they get. You know, it's breaking tackles and breaking and making something happen. And Jalen Glover, he's showed little flashes here and there where he's got a little wiggle in his step. But like for the most part, like if he gets breathed on wrong, like he's fallen over. Like he doesn't have that, and I'm surprised by that. And you know, you've watched a lot of, you know, all these games, Hans. Are you seeing something similar? Are you guys seeing something similar with Jalen Glover? Because he's not that guy. Like they, well, yeah.
I was just saying, remember the 2 years ago, and we're doing the 60 and 60, and there's a coach who will remain nameless, but names rhymes with Smile Schmittingham, who demanded the Jalen Glover as a freshman be on the 60 and 60.
Right.
And we're like, hey, we're not putting true freshmen on there. Like we don't know. And there were so many people in that program that thought this guy was going to be the next great running back. And it just isn't happening. And that's why you got to be careful with these kids, because you put that kind of pressure on. And I'm not, you know, I'm not pointing out Kyle in particular. I'm just saying, like, sometimes fan bases see these kids as true freshmen, think, oh, this guy's going to be great. This guy's going to be awesome. And he's a serviceable running back, but he's not your bell cow. Like he's a backup running back in the Pac-12. He's a guy that can help out and get you maybe, you know, 7 to 10 carries a game, but he's not a 25 carry a game guy. He's just not. You're right. He can't shed tackles. He can't get you short yardage situations. He's not a guy that you can rely on. And Jaquindon Jackson is, but he's banged up. And I mean, when I saw the news of the guys that aren't available and Jonah Hill out for the year, it's just like, man, this is just Utah season. It's just, this is the Utah right there in a little bit of a microcosm of the whole year. So much potential, so much there. And yet injuries are going to be, when we look back on this season, we're going to have a lot of what ifs just because of this team just could never get healthy and just got worse as the season went on.
Well, you guys tell me this, because Frank said in that postgame show yesterday, he said that he's never seen a game or a team have this deal with this many injuries. And I told Frank, I said, one, I forgot that Thanksgiving's on Thursday. I said, I'm giving you some homework, Frank. I said, I need you to write down the entire list of players that are out. And so we can go over this on Thursday. Like, and he's like, he's never seen, you guys tell me, have you guys seen a season like a team go through something like this with this many injuries, a team that is, you know, was set to be there, you know, possibly for a conference title game?
Well, I put that list together about 2 weeks ago and we read through it on the show.
Right.
And I did BYU's too. BYU's had more guys that have missed a game. But Utah's had more guys that are missing a season, and now you're adding Jonah Ellis to it. It's extensive. It's long, the list of guys that have missed games and the list of guys that are going to be out or were ruled out a while ago, even before they got started, of course, with Grant Keithy and Cam Rising. But it's bad. It's really bad. Especially with both Cole Bishop and Jonah Ellis out, that was just it's a head shaker.
They looked lost, Hans. They looked in that game. They defensively, I mean, don't get me. They scored 28 in the first half, and then they only put up what, two touchdowns in the second half. So they did slow them down, start to figure things out. But the thing is, they were behind. Once that was behind, hence why, I mean, if you hear Bryson Barnes went 30 he threw 53 passes, 31 of 53. Bryson Barnes can't be throwing the ball 53 times. That just can't happen.
Lloyd, describe to me what happened in that game. There, I guess it kicked up some controversy. There were some people speculating that Morgan Scully cold-shouldered Coach Fish, but then Morgan Scully actually put out a tweet and responded to a tweet from a guy that was like, oh, he ignored him, cold-shouldered him, he'll never forget this. And Morgan Scully quote-tweeted it and said, hey, look, you're a nice guy and fine with this tweet, but understand, I did not see him. No chance am I cold-shouldering him. So kind of a weird thing that happened on social media. What happened at the end of that game?
Well, so we, because this game had gotten so far away, had gotten out of hand, we actually started the post-game show with like 3 minutes left in it, and we were just sitting there kind of watching. So I saw the replay of the player. So they didn't go in the victory formation. They ran a play, and Kyle Whittingham said, you know, Kyle Whittingham was asked about it. He said, you know what? They weren't going in the victory formation, so we knew we needed to stop it. We knew they were running a play, and it's our job to run it. So I've seen that video of Jed Fish going to find Morgan, and I can't tell what. I'm not going to speculate on whether he cold short. I mean, I guess maybe it kind of looked like he did, but I don't know. In the heat of the moment, there's players around. He's shaking hands, you know, with people. Maybe he missed them. I don't know. I have no idea. But that's kind of the gist of it. I mean, I couldn't quite tell. I don't know what's going on in Morgan's mind. Did they run it up? Did they run a play? You know what? The Utes ran a play on Arizona State earlier in the year. They did something like that where they racked it up, and they've been beating the hell out of Arizona. Last year, I think they beat them 45-20 against them. Whether I don't remember if they put any points laid up on it, but that's, you know, that's just they're flexing their muscle a little bit. They're feeling good. I don't know. I don't really hold anything against them on it.
Morgan Scully. I mean, okay. I think we can all safely say we all know Morgan. Morgan did sports radio with us, you know, a long time ago. We all have good relationships with Morgan. You know, like, let's be honest here. Like, I think we all three of us can say with a certain level of authority, just because we know Morgan, Morgan didn't cold shoulder the dude.
Right.
Like, if there's a coach that I would 1,000% believe would never cold shoulder a guy, it's Morgan Scully. Because Morgan, that's just not his DNA. Like, we know Morgan. We can all vouch that Morgan would not do that. Other coaches, yeah, for sure. And other coaches, I would say, I don't know because I don't know them personally. But we all know Morgan personally. We know him not just as a coach, but personally. And Morgan just wouldn't do that. Like, I can safely say there's no way Morgan would have done that on purpose.
I don't see it either because, number one, Morgan could put himself in Coach Fish's shoes and say, yeah, we'd done the same. I mean, I believe Kyle tried to kick an onside and just kind of was trying to push the tempo, see if he could get anything going in the late part of that. And then you throw that ball because you're like, oh, I want to get competitive. We'll finish this thing up. I could see Morgan Scully doing the exact same thing. So after a game concludes, he's like, hell, man, they took it when they could get it. So I don't think that he would have cold shouldered him. I don't think that at all.
He's not vindictive like that. That's not him. Like, you know what?
But he was embarrassed and he's not going to let that happen. You know, I'm sure it'll be in the back of his mind. Like, I'm not letting that happen again, but yeah, I don't see him being weird about it at the end.
And let's be honest, not like that defense, they are so battered. It's not like they have a lot of choice. I mean, that Noah Fifita he's pretty good, by the way. I mean, he was 22 of 30. That is you could tell, by the way, in that game that this is not the Utah defense you're used to seeing because Arizona they were pretty flawless on third downs for the most part. I think they finished 7 of 11 on third downs. And some of those were longer third downs, by the way. They got them into positions where they could maybe get a stop, and he was able to scramble a little bit and make something happen. So that was a tough one. That was a tough one for the Utes. Let's move. Oh, go ahead, Scotty.
I was just going to say, the mindset of the Utes right now, I mean, obviously they're going to a bowl game. They'll probably beat Colorado. I don't know if you saw that score. Washington State just took them behind the whipping shed. So they should still beat Colorado.
Let me ask you guys this real quick. Say they don't beat Colorado. We know what they're dealing with. Say they don't beat Colorado. We know Colorado's not good. No. Does that put a bad spin on the game?
They're not losing to Colorado. There's no way.
If they do, does that put a bad spin on their season?
Oh, yeah. Horrible.
It would, right?
Yeah. Because every team they've lost to has been good teams. They don't have a bad loss,
right,
honestly.
But no.
If they lose to Colorado, that's a bad loss. And, yeah, that puts a real big stink on this season.
Yeah,
for sure. But I think, you know, the big storyline is going to be the injuries. And you're just like, okay, well, then let's go talk to our collective and let's go raise a little bit of money. Cam Rising will be back. Lander Barton will be back. Jonah Ellis will be back. Bishop, that'll be an interesting one. But overall, Utah's going to be loaded next year. If they stay healthy, they'll be, you know, one of the favorites, if not the favorite, to win the Big 12 next year. But the problem is that you got to stay healthy. And, you know, we talked about taking a deep dive in the BYU program. And again, when I say this, I'm not pointing out anybody in particular. I'm not making accusations, but you know Kyle Whittingham well enough, Hans, in particular, to know that he's going to take a long, deep dive in your strength and conditioning program and say, was this preventable? Some aren't. You know, some are just freak injuries that happen. But when you have this many, you have to go, okay, let's take a step back and let's spend some time. Could we have been better in our strength and conditioning? Were there things that were avoidable that we didn't do or we didn't do right? Can we do more research to realize how to get these guys through an entire season? Can we evaluate how hard we practice? Maybe we take it a little bit lighter in fall camp. Maybe we evaluate our practice schedule at the end of the season. Like, Utah's got to take a deep dive and say, okay, was this just a fluke and a weird year? Or do we need to address some things so that this doesn't happen at this level ever again?
Yeah. Yep. He will go to the furthest length to figure it out.
All right. Let's knock, knock, Scotty.
Who's there?
The Aggies.
Aggies got a loss. I did work it in, Hans. I got it in.
You really got it?
Yeah, it was in the third quarter, and Utah State was getting beat up pretty good. So let's just say it's not the most excitable knock-knock, but I did get it in.
I haven't listened to it yet. Our guy Alex sent it to me last night, and I have not listened to it yet, but I will. Aggies fall to Utah State falls to Boise State 45-10. And you see Cooper Legaw, McKay Hillstead, and even Levi Williams all getting some time. Talk to us a little bit about this one, Scotty.
Yeah, this was an interesting game because Utah State has never led this entire year at the end of the first quarter. It's never happened. Well, they dominate the first quarter, just dominate the first quarter. They're leading 7-0 at the end of the first. And on the first play of the second quarter, they kick a field goal. So they're up 10-0. Boom. And defense is playing well. They're getting stops. I think Boise State had like 20 yards rushing in the first quarter with 3-3 and outs. And I'm thinking, hey, this is it, man. This is the year. Utah State's going to hang in there, and they're going to have a chance to beat Boise State. And on the very next drive for Boise State, George Helani, as Utah State has kind of a blown assignment at the defensive line, and he goes 75 yards for a touchdown. It's 10-7. All right. Next play offensively, Utah State fumbles. Boise State on the very next play scores a touchdown. So in about 22 seconds of gameplay, Utah State goes from being up 10-0 to being down 14-10. Even then, Cooper Legaw takes them right down the field. It's 4th and 2, or 4th and goal from the 2-yard line. And Utah State runs a really funky, weird fly sweep to one side where Terrell Vaughn then rotates back around to the other side. And he's supposed to hit the tight end. Instead, it's intercepted as Boise State was just sitting on the route. It's returned back to the 20-yard line, another touchdown. And then after that, it was done. Boise State scores 31 points in that second quarter. They run, Hans, for 207 yards rushing in the second quarter. The second quarter, they have 200 yards rushing alone. They're up 31-10 at halftime. And then, oh, by the way, the play before that fourth down play, Cooper Legault, who'd been playing really well, injures. It looked like, we didn't get an official report, but kind of looked like he injured his shoulder. He leaves the game. McKay Hillstead comes in. And then he gets injured in the third quarter, and Levi Williams finishes the game. But Utah State loses 45-10. And Boise State put in Taylen Green. He was there. He was the quarterback. He's a really good running quarterback, but he can't throw the ball a lick. And he never had to. He never really had to throw the ball down the field because George Helotti and Ashton Genty, these two-headed monsters for Boise State, it was just it was like Air Force, where you know what's coming and you just can't stop it. And all the issues Utah State's had with their defensive line just came up and really bit them in the butt. And it was just Boise State was more physical up front. They were more powerful. Utah State gave up, I want to say, 9 sacks in the game. 6 of them came in the first half. And it was just an old-fashioned butt-whooping. I mean, just plain and simple. And Utah State now, much like BYU, they have to go on the road next week. They'll play New Mexico on Friday, and they need that game to get bowl eligible.
So I got to listen to you and Kevin, and heard when Cooper went down, then heard when McKay was sitting on his butt, not getting up. He was down and couldn't get off his butt. How injured is Cooper? How injured is McKay? And what is the situation going into that final week for the quarterbacks?
Great question, and I'll just be honest, I don't know. I mean, I had to catch a flight to the Cayman Islands, so I had to leave before post-game. I had to leave right at post-game to catch a flight. So I don't know right now as of early Sunday morning. I'll dig into it a little bit more, but it might be Levi Williams, the third stringer, getting the go against New Mexico. And even with Levi, they should still beat New Mexico. They really should.
Jeez. New Mexico, what's that say about New Mexico? Jeez.
No, they should. But I heard you saying, did I hear you say it was like Levi's last shot with Utah State that he was leaving our portal?
Yeah, so it's actually a really cool story. He's got his degree, and he is his soon-to-be wife, his fiance, is one of, you know, she's on the volleyball team and probably the best player on that volleyball team that has won 14 consecutive matches in a row. They're the one seed going into the Mountain West Conference tournament, and she's done. And his goal in life is always to be a Navy SEAL. So,
wow,
you know, he sees the writing on the wall. So he's essentially quitting football after this year to go into the military, and he wants to be a Navy SEAL. And so that's his plan right now. So this will be his final go as a college football player, even though I think he has another year, maybe even 2 years of eligibility left.
Oh, that'd be cool for him to get this team bowl eligible, go win a bowl game for him.
Yeah, no doubt.
When did you say, but, when did Cooper go, when did Cooper go out in this game?
It was second quarter when they were down 14-10 and trying to take the lead back at 17-14.
Man, because he was 8 of 12 for 128 yards, yeah. And it really seemed it was going to be a ball game, and then it didn't go anywhere after that.
Yeah, and again, there were multiple opportunities. You know, it's sometimes you see a game and you're like, okay, that was 45-10, but Hans, you know better than anybody, there's just one or two plays that can keep a game close or make it a blowout. And I do think Utah State, just one or two plays away or one or two little adjustments, could have been in this game. But, you know, giving up that 75-yard run where they were misaligned on the front, and then after that, the other team gains momentum, and it was just lights out. And had Utah State been a little bit more assignment sound, we may have had a different game. Now, look, I'm not saying Utah State wins that game, Boise State, but there's just when you lose momentum like that, it's just so hard to get it back. And then you lose your quarterback, and then you're dealing with all other kind of injuries. The running backs kind of kept getting shuffling in and out. They were all banged up, and it just got away from them. And then, much like, you know, the Iowa State game, Utah State just looked broken there in the second half and never could really mount anything at all.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if Utah State and BYU can get bowl eligible. I think Utah State does, and I think BYU's probably around a 30% chance. From what I saw against Oklahoma, it gave me a little bit of hope, and Oklahoma State did not look good through three quarters against West Virginia. So maybe, just maybe, but like Lloyd said, man, I mean, that's Oklahoma State 6-2. I think you said in Big 12 play, and
yeah, but I think, I mean, if they can come out and play like they, you know, like they did against Oklahoma, they will be in it. They will have every opportunity to be there. I think that they actually look like that was probably the most complete they've looked most of the season. I mean, they haven't had that run game. That run game, you know, being able to have that. And, I mean, Epps even looked good. I mean, he almost had 100 yards. Or did he go for 100? It was, I think it was like 90-something. Like, that was, you know, that I thought they had, things didn't go. I mean, the turnovers were brutal, you know. But for the most part, I thought they played pretty well.
Yeah. Yep. It just kind of bums me out because I think this whole season was really, I mean, let's just be honest here. It just kind of feels like we just hit a big dud of an ending for everybody here in the college football season. And especially if BYU can't get a win, the way Utah State's kind of limping across the finish line, the way Utah has just been decimated with, if that team's healthy, a potential college football playoff team. And I mean, we had the makings of something really special here.
A lot of woulda, coulda, shoulda.
It just feels like a little bad joke that ends in a car crash. It just feels like it just got wrecked.
you just can't help yourself, can you?
Don't be
joking about crash. Aren't you in like Newark right now? Don't be joking about crashes, dude. That's not good.
Yeah, maybe it's not. Maybe now's not the right time.
Yeah, now's not the time. All right, gentlemen, what do you got for the rest of your Sunday? I know what you got, Scotty. You're doing a little bit of travel. I think I'm going to go back to sleep, possibly. Hans, what you got going? Where are you at? What you cooking?
Well, Lloyd, I think that I am going to take care of my ecclesiastical duties.
And nobody believes that.
Amanda.
Take care of my
since when
this morning
every Sunday
there you go.
Hey,
what's up, mama?
What's up, guys?
You're making your morning after podcast debut. Say something.
I feel really special to be a part of this group.
We're sorry that we occasionally have to wake you up, Amanda. I'm really sorry about sending you those text messages.
Why does Amanda Olson get to be on the morning after and Jenny Girard does not get to be on the morning after?
Oh, we got problems.
You've been joining us on Football Fridays at El Matador quite often.
Well, that's true, but it's because it's down the street.
How's Scotty, if you know what I mean?
Hey.
Oh, don't. I see where this is going, and I don't know if I'm okay. I don't have a dump button here.
He's doing well.
It's a podcast, Lloyd.
And so am I.
If you know what I'm saying,
Amanda got some stories. Maybe she can share the inside scoop.
Well, I have a few.
Yeah.
What stories do you think you have?
I can't tell them on this.
Yeah. Hey, it's a podcast. You can literally do almost anything, Amanda.
Let's just say her stories are too big.
Jeez. That I almost believe that as much as you going to church later today.
I'm gonna be watching my Raiders.
Oh, you know it, right, bud?
What
time did they play, Hans? I don't even know. What time do they play? Yeah, you don't even know the time. Oh man, I love you. I love it. Just win, baby. Just win. All right.
Oh, of course, I know what time they are. They kick off at 11 o'clock on CBS.
Oh, so you pulled it up. Good. Good to know. Good to know. I know you're looking at it right now on your computer, but okay. All right, gentlemen. Well, Scotty, safe travels. Hans, you guys have a good one. We will do this again at noon tomorrow. join us as we break down these games. The Morning After podcast, of course, brought to you by UCCU. Love where you bank. Hans Olsen, Scott Gerard, Lloyd Cole, right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
This has been your Morning After podcast with Hans, Scotty, and Lloyd Cole. Presented by UCCU. Love where you bank. Catch more of the Hans and Scotty Show weekdays from noon to 3. And in podcast form by searching Hans and Scotty on your podcasting platform of choice. This is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.